right. I suppose we'll go ahead and get started. Hi, everyone. For your post-lunch coma enjoyment, I am Jason Griffey. I am a librarian and former academic librarian, current itinerant librarian, doing interesting building things for libraries. And I was asked to do this talk as a result of a project that I am working on called Measure the Future, which hopefully if you're here, you read the description and know kind of what we are going to be talking about. I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story at the beginning about how this came to light and why I think this project is doing important work. And then we're going to talk about the project and talk about the particulars, what it is we're doing, how we're doing it, what we're implementing, what we're hoping you get out of it, what we think libraries could benefit from. We'll talk through kind of what we're building and hoping that you take up. And then near the end, I have a couple of questions for you, and then you can ask questions of me about the project. So as we go, if there's a burning issue, throw something at me. I don't mind stopping and answering questions in the middle, but we'll have time at the end to do that. So the tagline here for the project is Next Gen Use Metrics for Libraries. And that's a very fancy term about that came about because I spent a decade as an academic librarian, most of that as head of IT for the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. And as a part of my role as head of IT, I spent the better part of 6 years planning a brand new academic library building. We were lucky enough in 2007 to be funded for a brand new building, $48 million and 180,000 square foot construction monstrosity by the state. And as a result of that, we spent a long time, like I said, 6 years in the process of talking about our spaces and trying to figure out what sort of spaces were important in libraries, how spaces were used in libraries, what patrons wanted out of spaces in libraries. And it was through this process, through this long, arduous, multi-stakeholder process that I came to really hate library statistics. It's preaching to the choir. I know. And it wasn't for the reasons that are obvious, because they're terrible and often fuzzy. And it was for the reasons that they are not often the statistics that we choose to gather in libraries and that we report often in libraries to our stakeholders are not actionable statistics. They're not statistics that we can predict things and then act upon them for, right? We track the size of our collection. But the size of our collection doesn't tell us anything about what we should do next year, right? We track the number of people that walk through our doors. But aside from some very rough staffing ideas, like we don't really know what people are doing inside the buildings once they get there. Like we just have this very rough metrics, right? So what I was interested in was that second step. I wanted a statistic that told me how I should be treating my building and what I should be doing inside the building to make it better for my patrons. And it turns out that there were systems that would do that sort of thing. They first cropped up about 15 to 20 years ago in casinos. And they were used as surveillance mechanisms to track what people were doing inside casinos. And then as the cost of those systems came down, they started being used in major big box stores, department stores, and Walmarts and Walgreens. If you have ever been in a Target or a Walmart and looked at an end cap, right, the very finely designed products at exactly the right level for you to see and, you know, boring things down low but interesting things up high. And those decisions are made as a result of statistics that they gather using sensor-based systems. That's been going on for a very long time in these other spaces. The problem is that the buy-in for those is in the $200,000 range, right? Which nonprofits sadly are not funded to do. We should be, but we're not. So I decided I wanted to try and fix that, or at least give some options to libraries to try and start understanding better what goes on inside our buildings so that we can make better decisions. So I started the Measure the Future project, which is measurethefuture.net. As my previous slide indicated, we were lucky enough to be one of the 8 winners of the Knight News Challenge for Libraries back in 2014. So the project has been funded largely by the Knight Foundation to get us to this point, and then the next steps, which we'll talk about in a little while. If you are interested in that sort of grant funding, I will mention that the Knight Foundation just today launched the next News Challenge for Libraries, which is at newschallenge.org. If your library has a project that it's interested in, it can visit newschallenge.org and see kind of how that process works and stuff. But it's amazing funding. The foundation is amazing to work with. If you are sitting there on your phone, I hope you're tweeting. This is ALA Midwinter 16 and Measure the Future. If you want to hashtag those, I'll go back and answer questions there too. Set your phones to tweet, as they say. So what I wanted when I kind of imagined this process in my head, what I wanted was the equivalent of Google Analytics for my building, right? Google Analytics on the digital side of the world for my website or other systems. I'm using Google Analytics as a stand-in. There are other systems that do this. But is a system that tells me, right, when did someone come in? What did they do when they were there? How long did they spend on this page? Where did they go after they left this page? And that level of data allows us to optimize for what people are doing. It allows us to make the experience better for our patrons. This is not data for data's sake, right? This is data that lets us make active and appropriate changes to improve our patrons' experience. And that's what we, I hope, are all worried about. So that's what I wanted. I wanted Google Analytics for buildings. There is a problem with that that we will discuss and that you will all point out to me with throwing things and shouting in a little while, and that is privacy. Privacy is a problem, but I think we've got it solved. So there were a couple of things I knew needed to happen in order to make this affordable. Right now, the only solutions are proprietary commercial solutions that are, you know, you go to a vendor and they price it based on reading chicken entrails, I guess, and give you a number, and then you pay the number every year, and they give you statistics. And that's the way this works. How many of you have bought door counters in the last couple of years, right? How much did those cost? $500. I talked with a library earlier that bought two, I mean, admittedly, very fancy door counters, but they bought two. For two doors, it was $20,000. They're doing very fancy stuff, but yeah. Anyway, so I knew that I wanted this to be affordable and reasonable for libraries, right? It has to be something that libraries can actually implement. And so I wanted to make sure that what we build, what is funded, and what we build is open. It is something that libraries can see. They can see the code. The hardware is available. This is not a proprietary solution. This is not something that is you're required to come to us, and again, we make up a price and quote it to you. This is all open software. I have some experience doing open software and hardware projects. I'm also the director of the Library Box project, which if you haven't heard about, you can Google and find out. But I've done this. I've done an open software hardware project. Library Box is currently used in about 40 countries around the world, in 30 some odd states, and on all 7 continents, which I find very exciting because I finally got one to Antarctica. Yeah, I was very excited about that. So I had an idea of how this was going to work and what I wanted. And so we had to figure out how to measure the future. How do you measure the future? Well, we went with a solution based on, very inexpensive, webcams. So we're using cameras to do this. And this is the point where your privacy ears should perk up. Privacy problem. Again, I'll explain. So we are developing this with what we're calling scouts. And the scouts are our little sensors that we put up places. So we've got these little cute cute little webcam-based sensors. This was our first generation. We've already kind of switched over to a slightly different generation. These are effectively for anybody who cares about the hardware, this is a generic Logitech webcam, and then on the back is a little Intel Edison microcomputer, tiny, tiny little postage stamp size computer. And this system is put in a space, a room, a hallway, looking at your stacks, looking at a new book display, whatever it is you want it to look at. And it surveys the space, looks at the movement that occurs in the space, removes the people from that movement, and tracks only the kind of traces that are left behind. So it's not taking pictures of people. It's not videoing and storing your patrons or anything like that. What it's recording is literally like traces of the movement. Okay? That gives us the ability then to have a little server that interprets this data. We call it the mothership. The mothership is this cute little 3D printed thing right now. Later it will be something else. But right now it's this cute little 3D printed thing. And the Scout transfers anonymized data to the mothership. So again, we're collapsing sets of data together so that you don't have a situation where you're able to identify individuals in the data set. There are no kind of individuals in the data set. We're collapsing them together and just using collective movement. The mothership then provides a Wi-Fi signal. You connect to it with your browser, you log in, and you're able to see the results of that, which currently are a heat map of your space. So you can see what the busy areas of your room are and the not so busy areas of your room are. We'll see a video of how this works here in a second. Once you have multiple Scouts in place, they will all answer to the mothership, and you'll be able to log in with your browser and see a kind of a total view of what's going on in your building. You'll be able to see where the people are, at what points in the day, how they flow through your building, and you'll be able to see much, much, much more thoroughly how your patrons enjoy your spaces. So having said that, I'm going to show a couple of very quick videos about what we're doing so that you can see yourself kind of how we're dealing with the data. So this first video is the computer vision video of how we are anonymizing our vision. So it starts by taking away the background, identifying a moving object, kind of anonymizing the object, and then removing the object from the frame completely. And those blue dots are what we're recording. Really, it's the tracing of the people moving, right? So you don't have individual photos being saved, stored, anything like that. It's a big deal. Privacy is very important for us. So you add that up over the course of a day, and then you analyze it, and you get this robust idea of what's going on in your space. And currently, this is very young. This is very, you know, we're still developing this. But the idea is that you will have something like this this example, and we'll get logged in here, and you'll be able to see what we're doing. So we have a clock display that tells you when your building is busy and when it's not, with people counts, right? So you can kind of see when you ramp up and when you're not. We have a heat map that shows the space and then shows the busy and the not busy parts. And obviously, the more data, the more robust that will be. You'll be able to see much more fully what's busy and what's not, along with the individual space measurement, and then the people count for how many people have gone through that space in whatever time period you want to measure. Total number of people over 7 days, et cetera. Yep. Obviously, this is data. This is made up data. Nobody's climbing the wall. If you're worried about that heat, this is demo data. So, and then we'll have some. You know, there are other information and some admin for you to set things up and that sort of thing. But the interesting thing is the heat map. So. The version 1, which is what we're working on right now, is going to give you what we're calling attention measurement. Again, we're trying very hard not to pay attention to what what people, what individual people, persons, are doing in a space, but rather kind of how the space is interacted with by people. So it's the space is what we're paying attention to. So attention measurement in the space. So and then that measurement being time sliced so that you can tell when your spaces are being used and kind of what areas they're being used in. The data is all available. Again, this is an open project, so we're not going to like lock it down and make you pay for access to your own data. That's silly and crazy, and people still do it. But it'll all be open. You'll be able to do with your data whatever you want because it's an open project. We are paying, again, I've said it again and again, but we're paying heavy attention to privacy protection. We are working with the Library Freedom Project, which is also a Knight fundee, but is a project that's dedicated to patron privacy in libraries. So we are working with them to make sure that we're not doing anything dumb. I am only as smart as I am, and there are way smarter people doing privacy work. So I'm going to them, and I'm getting them to tell me where I make dumb mistakes. We are also planning for future versions, right? So we're planning time out, additional sensor support. Once we have the basics built and we're measuring attention inside spaces, you can imagine extending this with other sensors, humidity, temperature, noise sensors, so that you can start correlating. Oh, okay, well, people leave every day at 3 o'clock. Why do people leave every day at 3 o'clock, right? Why do they leave the study room every day at 3 o'clock? Oh, well, the temperature goes up 15 degrees every day at 3 o'clock. That's why they leave the space, right? Right now, that is all completely invisible to us. But if we had it, we would be way better able to serve our patrons because we could change it. We could fix it. We're talking about adding what we're calling hyperlocal location measurement. You can actually use ultrasound, very small ultrasound sensors, to tell when people are getting closer and farther away from a thing. So something like a new book display. If you notice people walking by it, why are they not stopping and picking up a book? You can A/B test your spaces and improve them. Obviously, once we have data, you can do lots of things with data. Integration into other products is something that we are interested in. So if you already have some sort of data analytics system, this is, again, an open system. Our API is something that will be implementable in lots of different ways. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sure. No, it's okay. Yes, it does. What it's doing is, so when it does the background removal, it pays attention, as long as they are in the frame, it is paying attention to the time they're spending inside the frame. So yes, so if someone comes in and sits down and reads a book, you will get that as a heat spot, right? Because people are paying attention to that particular spot. Yeah. Yeah, it's not just movement based. No, totally. Good question. And then eventually we would love to be able to provide a portal that multiple libraries could take advantage of, right? I mean, I know that you have lots of branches, and we'd like for a central place for you to be able to do that. Our version one doesn't have that, and won't have that. But eventually, we would like to be able to do it in a more robust way for you. So what we're talking about really is moving in the direction of having a smart building, of having a building that itself reports to you what people are doing inside it, right? And where you could improve their experience of your building. The ability, I mentioned it just a second ago, but the ability to A/B test spaces. We A/B test, if you're not familiar with what an A/B test is, we A/B test websites all the time. An A/B test is simply giving people one thing, giving people a second thing, and seeing which they prefer, right? Major websites do this every day, all the time, thousands and millions of times a day. Amazon's better at this than Google is, but Amazon will change the color of the button that says buy very slightly and see if anybody clicks it more often, right? Libraries do this too. They change the location of a button on the website and then see which one is more popular with patrons, see which one gets more clicks. With something like Measure the Future with a system that reports usage inside buildings, you can A/B test your spaces. So you can imagine running the system in a space for a week, a month, whatever, and then making changes and seeing how people react to the changes, and are the changes better or worse for people's use of your space. If it's worse, well, then don't do that. If it's better, well, then do that more, right? So you can incrementally upgrade the experience of your patrons simply by, you know, paying attention to the data. One of the things I'm most interested in is the ability of something like this to give you an insight into what people are actually doing, not actually doing, but what people are paying attention to in the stacks. So we have circulation data, and we have very strong opinions about how important the browsing experience is. There is very little data about how important the browsing experience is. And with a system like this, you could selectively choose a part of your stacks that you wanted to see, right? Where people pause, how long do they spend in the stacks? And then you could correlate those rough pieces of data with circulation data and really know, does browsing behavior influence circulation? We don't know that right now. Yes, sir. Sure, I mean, I hope every library is doing that. Yes. I mean, Google Analytics or some web analytic tool is exactly this sort of thing for the digital world. Yeah. Attention, it measures what people are clicking on, how long they spend on a page, that sort of thing. So. It depends on the system you use. Some will tell you what they click on. Some will track the actual movement of the mouse, and you can look at heat maps of the, like, what people are actually scrolling to and things. Yeah, there's eye tracking to see what people are looking at. There's a number of ways that you can do that sort of thing. Yeah. But the evaluating the stacks for me as a tech data nerd, this is really interesting to finally have a tool that could tell me what people are doing, whether or not there is a correlation between the actual checkouts and how many people are in the, you know, the PQs. And then longitudinally, if we have this sort of data over time, we can start to preemptively plan staffing models that we may not have been able to plan before, right? If we know how traffic flows through our buildings and we see patterns over time, and we know that, we can preemptively say, well, okay, next week there are going to be more people over there than over here, so our roaming reference people should really pay attention to that corner. We can just be more effective about the way we use our buildings. And I think that is really an interesting thing for us to think about. One of the most interesting things for me about this system that I'm trying to build is that it just makes visible what we have anecdotal beliefs about. And now we may actually be able to have numbers. And when we are in a situation where how many people have circulation counts for print materials that are growing? Okay, two. Good. All right. I figured that was the case. When we have numbers that are challenging to present to our funding to our funders, right? When we have numbers that are beginning to be challenging to explain to our boards, maybe we need new numbers to give them that show them how important we are to our communities. And being able to go to your board with data that says, you know, this reference space that, you know, everybody just uses Google. Well, no, as a matter of fact, not only did we have, and you guys track your reference numbers, right? Not only did we have, you know, 500 reference questions asked at our desk, but there were 3,000 people that came past, right, that used the space. And you'll have that information with this sort of a system. So looking over the next 3, 5, 10 years of libraries, this understanding of how our patrons are using our building, I think, is going to become more and more and more important. Because we're going to need other numbers that show how important we are. Our circulation numbers are not going to be enough for our communities anymore. So this is us. It's measurethefuture.net. And if you're a tweeter, we are at measurefuture. We also have a booth. I don't have anything to sell you. I'm not selling anything, but I like talking about it. So we have a booth. We're actually sharing a booth with the Library Freedom Project. So if you're interested in patron privacy, you can double up and come see both of us. It's booth 223. If you're coming down the escalators on the north side of the thing, we're right at the bottom of the escalators, which is really nice. But you can come by if you want to see the actual sensors, if you want to see the mothership, the little 3D printed mothership, if you want to see kind of what we've done, then you can come by. And we've got things there to show you and talk about, and you can come get a sticker for your laptop. It's important. Our goal at this point is to have a product that you can implement in your libraries this summer. Where our timeline is to try to hit ALA Annual as a launch, right? So hopefully by June, you will be able to go to our website and download our code and use it. That's my hope. That's the plan. So I left a lot of time at the end because I really wanted to talk to you and about this. So I have questions for you. So this is where we turn the tables. So now that you've heard about it, and you have kind of seen what we're trying to do. One, would you use this? And two, how would you use it? Are there things that you can think of in your building that this might help you with? Or are there things that I've talked about that make you go, holy crap, I could never do this in a million years? Either one. I'll take both. Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
And so we are all kind of looking at short-term, medium-term, and then that three long-term solution. And I think this could be really helpful for aggregating the data for eventually that long-term solution. So we can go to the builders and this is the kind of space it, but also as support for funding, to say, I know you don't believe us as students are using computer labs.
Totally. Yeah, that's one of the other kind of things that I wanted to do with this system in our academic library was to point it at the row of study rooms and then just look at the heat trail of people that walk by them because they're full. Like, like nope, okay, there's no rooms. Like, it's a good argument for more rooms, right? Yes, ma'am. Yeah. No worry, I'll repeat. Yeah, so this was a high school library where she said that it would be interesting to have the data because the circulation counts are not there necessarily, but the kids want to be there, and it's a vibrant space for them, and being able to take that data and prove it again. Like, taking this usage data, I think, again, is going to be just much, much more valuable over the next few years for us. Yes, ma'am, right here. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Yeah. There's one person in them. Yeah. Yeah. Using this to do the evaluation of it's a 4-person room and there's always one person in it. How can we make it more useful for the 4 people, for 4-person groups? Or how can we then provide 1-person study areas that are appropriate? Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah.
And it actually would be
Yeah.
In its migration.
So.
And see, like, should it actually be
in this other space? House? Yeah. The answer is all of the furniture should be right next to an outlet. All of it. Whoa. Right next to electricity all the time. that's the answer, right? Yes, as a matter of fact, it would, because the way the system currently works is it uses a keyframe. So you take, when you set the system up, you press a button and it takes a picture of it, of the space empty. And then the rest of the data is done by looking at the differences between that first image and all of the other images. So if a piece of furniture moved, it would treat that like an object of interest and then track where that went. That's an interesting, I'll take that to my developer and see if we can figure out how to make that a different thing. It's fairly easy to, identify, human movement. We all tend to move in roughly the same way and gait and all of that. So it wouldn't be hard, I don't think, to code it in so they would know it was a piece of furniture, not a person, right? Like you could actually have two levels of, I'll take that to my developer. Yeah. Right here in the front. Yeah. Yeah, that is a plan for version 2. We're planning additional sensors. So yeah, noise, humidity, temperature, all of those sorts of things. So you can do some correlation. I have had two people ask me about odor sensors. that's a lot harder, honestly. Mostly because of proximity to the source. Noise, humidity, and temperature are very easy. Those are easy and fast. There may be other things that people eventually want to measure that could be easily plugged in. One of the things that we've done is architected the system in such a way so that the data flowing into the analysis engine is open, so that whatever data we want to throw at it, you could start doing correlations with it. And the data structure is a, excuse me for going all geek for a minute, but it's a simple JSON like API. It's very straightforward if you have anybody that knows web programming or anything like that. So it's very easy to add things to. So yes, ma'am. To that. So I have had lots of people ask me about Wi-Fi. We intentionally chose not to do a Wi-Fi overlay, and it is a fairly easy thing to do if you have that data layer. We intentionally chose not to do it for privacy reasons, because measuring Wi-Fi strength necessarily involves knowing what the device is that's in that space, and the device is very easily tied to the person. So in our kind of design of the system, we intentionally kind of threw out any idea that relied on identifying a person rather than, again, kind of measuring the space. We don't want to know who people are. That's not to say it can't be done. It can be done. It is, again, an open system. The data overlay could be done in a number of different ways. We are probably not going to do that for the foreseeable future until we can find a way to actively anonymize it. That's comfortable for us, you know. Let's go way over here. You had your hand up. Yeah. Yeah. So program and outreach manager. So the both the Scout and the Mothership, if you come down to the booth, you can see them. They're tiny little things. And part of the idea is that they are mobile. So libraries could choose, instead of having to do bolt them to the ceiling and have them permanently installed, you could measure one part of your building for a month and get some data and be happy with the data and then move it to another part of your building. And sure. Yeah. The Mothership and the sensor talk to each other directly. They don't need external Wi-Fi. So they're actually completely mobile. They're powered over USB, so you can plug them into anything. And the two of them will happily talk to each other anywhere. So totally, you could take them out on theoretically, you could even take them on a bookmobile or something. So yeah. Over here. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So I have all sorts of ideas of how this could be used, and this could be relevant to a library room as well as an archive. I was thinking
sure.
of using
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, so figuring out what the optimal space for researchers is as far as their spread in a in a building, right? Yeah. When they sit down at the big table, do they take it all or do they let people get near them? Yeah, totally. That sort of thing this would be totally usable for. In the middle, yeah.
So going back to the question of Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Would there be a way to not figure out what devices are on there, but the number of devices? So you can say like 200 people use the Wi-Fi today.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, you can. I mean, for tracking Wi-Fi, you can do anonymization by you just throw away everything except that single number, right? There are ways to do that. I didn't touch on this, but the other reason that we didn't go there is that we wanted to be as accurate as we could in our counting, and especially in public libraries, using Wi-Fi as a number by which to judge your busyness undercounts the most fragile people we serve, those that don't have Wi-Fi devices, and it also excludes children mostly from those counts. So as a secondary count, that might work. We chose not to implement that again right now, mostly because we wanted to be accurate. So anything else? Oh, yeah, up front, sorry. Oh, sure, a light sensor. Yeah. Like again, I have not had that suggestion before, but that's totally another sensor that could be included. Yes, yeah, absolutely. You can look at wavelengths, just the combination of wavelengths to determine whether it's fluorescent or natural light. That's fairly simple to do. Yeah. Over here?
So you just mentioned that the mothership and the...
Yeah, Scout. Yeah.
So what is the range on that?
Six or whatever. Yeah, sure. You're going to have basically the system is going to need to be one or two rooms apart, right? So it's kind of it's a together system. If you want multiple scouts in the same room, you'd only need one mothership for that because they're all going to fit pretty easily. If you're, again, an 8-story concrete slab, like a lot of our libraries are, you may need to carve that up in a different way and put different systems together. It's one of the reasons that we know on our development plan needs to be a consolidated cloud sort of, everybody reporting up. Sort of thing. So it's on our development list, but yes, you're going to have kind of islands with different analysis engines handling them. So, all right. Yes, right here in the middle. And then we'll go to the back there. Yeah, we are working on that, especially at desks and things where, that's on our, on our list of to-dos between now and annual is what the plan roughly is to be able to, if you're pointing it at a desk, for example, to be able to mark a space of like, just don't pay attention to, the area behind the desk. That space like is going to be staff and we're not going to worry about it. It is harder with the way we've architected it to do like people walking down a hallway and, we can't just magically forget that staff exist everywhere, but in spaces where we know they're going to be a lot, we can do some background, like blanking, basically. So, and then way in the back.
I've also heard, and maybe it's the same thing that you're offering, yeah, about
using
GIS stats
or
predicting subject area use in academic
libraries,
because, certain areas of the stacks are
going to
different.
Sure.
Areas,
GIS stats in what way? Maybe we're using the different acronym. I'm used to GIS meaning like geographic information systems, and I'm not sure how GIS applies to stacks.
GIS map of your library,
yeah.
Then you can analyze
the subject
area.
Sure. Do you know where that data comes from? Do they track like Wi-Fi signals or something? Yeah. I have seen systems that do it. Yeah, cell phone signals. I have seen systems that do both Wi-Fi and cell identification. Some of them even use Bluetooth and the Bluetooth beacon technology, which you may have heard about. Some of them do that sort of thing. Again, one of the reasons that we have chosen to architect our system the way we have is that that just ignores people that don't have devices on them. And we would rather include them than not. Yeah. Sure. RFID can do that in a very minimal sense. Long term, like 10 years from now, we're probably going to be putting like little tiny iPad chips in all of our books because they're going to cost 5 cents and we're not going to care. And they're going to tell us where they are everywhere in the world. So like ultimately there's, you know, long term Moore's law is going to let us do that. But yeah. So, and yeah, one more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're
going to
try to look at this, like,
yeah.
What time
it is. Yeah. So we're very alpha, and the rough testing is that you start seeing patterns after about a week. You start seeing kind of patterns emerging. In the timeline, just so you have it, is that we're working with two libraries as alpha partners. One is the Meridian Public Library in Idaho. And one is SUNY Potsdam in Potsdam, New York. So we picked a mid-sized public and a mid-sized academic, right? And the goal is to have alpha units in their spaces doing the measurement they want to do in late February, early March. And then we will gather that information and, you know, feedback from the librarians and figure out what we need to do as next steps in order to make the summer, you know, product launch, hopefully. So... else? Yeah, so we're here. Yeah, you would, I mean, they're, depending on how your rows are arranged, it has to have visual access, right? So it has to be able to visually see the space you want to measure. If your rows are nice and long and, you know, you may actually need one per, you may need one for every two if they're fairly short. It just depends on what your space looks like. And some of that will probably come from testing, right? We'll have, once we get some testing units out and we get some tests, we'll have some recommended layouts and be able to advise people on the best way to set them up. So, yes.
Have you thought at all about aggregating data from multiple libraries to start developing a body of knowledge for best practices?
Yeah, that is high on my list. The consent and privacy issue is something that we have to attack at every library level. Once we get to the second stage where we're doing the consolidated mothership into a cloud-based system for people to do more rigorous analysis on, that's when it becomes easier to do that level of comparison. Ideally, I would love to work with libraries who were comfortable opening their data up and letting anyone poke at it, right? So, yeah, ideally, I would love to have this data and be able to open it to the community and let libraries analyze it to their heart's content. My interest is in making libraries better. So I would love to give all of that away and let people use it. Okay, one more? Yeah. Yeah, for identification, yeah. Yeah, we've had a couple of interesting suggestions on that front. Technically, that is possible. I'm moderately discomforted in making staff wear, like, patches or something. Like, I don't know. It gets a little weird. I don't know. But, yeah, ideally. We actually had someone this morning at our booth suggest that we program in gesture control. Like, if they want to, like tell the system to do something, they just want, like, a special wave to do at the camera, and it would recognize what they wanted to happen. Like, that's pretty cool. We, you know, not now. All right. Okay, one last one. It does. Yeah, it does. It does record directional information. So we're going to be able to do, it's not right now. It's not like perfect, but it will do in and out. Right. So, by looking at the vector of the movement of the object, so it records the points that people move through and then the time stamps that they move through it. So by combining those two pieces of data, you get a direction, right? Speed and time give, or direction and time give you a vector. And then obviously the reverse if they're going another direction. So you can tell which way things are moving. So we're, so one of the other ideas we have, not necessarily for vectors, but we would love to be able to do, to have multiple scouts, like one on one wall, one on the other, and then to use the two pieces of data to build heat maps on top of building maps, rather than just kind of the visual room analysis that I had, but to be able to give you like a map of your library with all of the movement stuff overlaid. That will take multiple scouts to do, and that's again, development goal, like we've got, you know, lots of things we want to work towards. But that's on the list. So, yes, ma'am.
How does your heat map account for people sitting and staying?
Yeah, so we had that question earlier. It tracks them as individual points and the length of time they sat there so that you get, like, these chairs are being used, but those chairs are not being used, that sort of thing. So, all right. So I know you don't mind getting out of here a couple of minutes early, but just if anybody wants to follow up, this is me. I'm Jason. I'm currently a fellow at the Berkman Center here in Boston at Harvard. Bunch of things you can follow up with me. My website is just jasongriffey.net. So if you remember my name, you can get there. And you can follow up if you have any questions. So come see us at the booth. We'll be down there. Somebody will be down there to answer questions. So thank you.